sales win rates have plummeted to a mere 17%, and outdated technology and tedious manual processes are to blame. Meanwhile, managers lack the visibility they need to hold their teams accountable. But imagine a world in which these crippling issues are solved automatically. Revenue.io automates the most frustrating parts of sales so reps can focus on what they do best, selling. Completely automate pre-call research, logging conversation data in your CRM, writing post-conversation recap emails, and prioritized outreach. And as reps book more meetings and close more deals, managers gain the real-time insight they need to scale what's working across their entire team. Ready to say goodbye to tedious sales processes and watch your win rate soar? Head over to revenue.io to learn more.
Yeah, I think ultimately, you know, there's a trust relationship, particularly because the sale, of course, is not the end of it, as we know. It's really the start of the relationship. So, you know, what you're looking, obviously, you're going to, you know, help them effect change in their organization and achieve some real business value. And therefore, there's going to be a lot of it face-to-face engagement with the business ongoing. And then hopefully, you know, it goes well and you're expanding your business with them. So, you know, that's a, you know, a trusted relationship that has to be built up. So I think, as you say, you know, sales is just the start. So to build that relationship, to build that trust, and to be able to really challenge the customer, I think, you know, customers don't want sellers that just turn up and respond to what they're asking for. You know, I think they're looking for, you know, sellers that bring something, organisations that bring something, that, you know, share what they've seen in other organisations, that challenge their thinking, you know, maybe stretch their thinking a little bit in terms of what they could achieve, you know, bring business value cases, you know, really help them prioritise where they should, you know, invest to, you know, ultimately achieve, you know, the business goals.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the Sales Enablement Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Paul. Now, that was Karen Clark. Karen's the Senior Vice President and Managing Director for the Americas for Anaplan. And in our conversation today, we're talking about how organizations need to stay laser focused on revenue at a time when customers are tightening the budgets and shifting their buying behaviors. Now, Karen and I dig into three things sales leaders should be focused on as they plan how to prioritize their sales resources. We explore what Karen sees as the key sales planning disconnect, if you will, with sales leaders that's sabotaging their efforts to retain top sales talent. And we get into what leaders should be focused on with regard to enablement and sales execution when the environment gets tougher. So we get to all of this and much, much more. Before we get to Karen, I want to remind you to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. So let's jump into it. Karen, welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me, Andy. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well. Well, tell us a bit about you and what you do, and, you know, we'll get a little bit into your backstory too.
Yeah, sure. Great. Well, I'm the MD of Americas for Anaplan at the moment. And for your listeners, hopefully some of them know Anaplan because we have about 2,000 customers globally. But if they don't, we're a SaaS planning platform. So, you know, we're recognized in Gartner as being in the leaders quadrants, and including for sales and operations planning, which I think is relevant to, you know, this discussion.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but a few things about me, I guess. I'm going to give something away here, but I'm in my third decade of being in this fantastic profession of selling. So mm-hmm. 3 decades in sales management and sales leadership. I also have led, you can probably tell I'm British, so I started my career.
A little bit, you came across,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, from Derbyshire, if you're trying to locate that accent there. But I started my career in the UK, led businesses across EMEA, and then spent 4 years in Singapore running businesses in Asia Pacific before now being in the Americas. So that's a change. For me, I've only been in the Americas since the start of this calendar year, so it's a new adventure. And I guess the third thing I would say is, the great thing about Anaplan, and I think, you know, as I said, I love sales because it gives you such an insight into so many different companies and their mm-hmm. business. A great thing about Anaplan is I get to work with lots of CROs and sales operation leaders. So I get to hear a lot about what other sales operation leaders and CROs are facing at the moment. So, you know, really interesting, both in terms of them being customers, but also, you know, peers in the market and how we're facing some of the challenges together.
Well, and let's start digging into that. So, if we're not already in technically, I don't know if technically we're in a recession, but we certainly seem to be heading that way for sure. Sort of these other factors have sort of been at play as, you know, we got the slowdown, we've got, we had the great resignation and, people are trying to find staff. But now some companies are also doing layoffs. And so it's a lot of uncertainty around, you know, individual sellers, individual contributors as well. So certainly adds up to a challenging time for sales leaders.
Indeed, yes. Yes, I'm hearing those same things. I have to say, as you said, recession, the uncertainty that's bringing in terms of, you know, how's it going to affect customers, how it's going to affect how they buy, what they buy, labor, you know, the Great Recession, everybody's, you know, seeing a late, you know, volatile market for labor, and that's affecting, you know, sales attrition. So how do I retain my top talent in this market? And, you know, obviously, ultimately, how do I get value out of the sales capacity that I've got and ensure that I'm really getting that productivity? So a lot of topics there that I think, are top of mind. And certainly when I was talking to customers at Dreamforce recently, these were the sorts of topics we were talking about.
Well, it's interesting. I was reading about some of the employment statistics in the economy, and they're saying there's still, though, there's this, you know, fairly large gap between the number of vacancies that exist and, sort of the unemployment rate. And usually they want them more tightly correlated, but it seems like, a lot of attrition we're concerned about, but there still seems like this huge demand for sales talent out there as well, even though things seem to be slowing down.
Yes, I think you're right. I mean, I think talking to revenue leaders that I was speaking to, you know, there's still a gap in their capacity. And so whilst obviously hiring is really important, how to retain your current talent, ensure that they're rewarded, that obviously therefore, you know, they're earning money, and how to make sure that you're deploying that talent in the best way, you know, across your territories, particularly with, you know, looking back to this uncertainty, you know, how are my customers going to buy, and therefore which, you know, which segments are going to buy, and how do I put my talent into those right segments? So I think, you know, a lot of capacity issues certainly being discussed with revenue leaders at the moment.
I mean, when you're saying capacity, it's not that they're under-resourced necessarily, it's just how they're allocating the capacity they have to make sure it's most productive.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a key topic. I mean, certainly, you know, with attrition, I think people are looking at, you know, how do I ensure that, you know, I'm getting, you know, good productivity out of the reps that I've got? How do I ensure that I retain my talent by, you know, getting that good balanced rep performance? But then, you know, looking ahead in particular at the moment, as a lot of, sales leaders are going into their planning for next fiscal, how do I, you know, segment my territories? How do I ensure I'm targeting my reps on the right parts of the market, where I know that they're going to be most productive? Because I think, you know, there's certainly I'm hearing, you know, the phrase, you know, profitable growth now. I think, I mean, where before, you know, growth was, I guess, the mantra of sales organizations, now that we hear much more about profitable growth and therefore, you know, how am I making, you know, my reps productive and getting most out of the, you know, the talent that I've got in my organization.
But when you're talking to other CROs, though, are you hearing that in terms of profitable growth? Because I was having a conversation with a company founder today in the SaaS world, saying that they're thinking, well, yeah, given where things sort of stand, is maybe we haven't, maybe we need to start over-indexing maybe to a greater degree on our existing customers and driving new revenue through them, as opposed to, not they give up new revenue development, but maybe shift the balance a little bit, because they thought maybe we were too over-indexed on new logo acquisition. And, you know, you get into tough times. Yeah, you want to keep your customers. You want to be able to mine your customers, support them, drive new revenue through them. Do you see people rebalancing their portfolios that way?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly that, you know, do I invest in my existing customers, my expansion opportunities, or do I still look to grow in new markets is something that a lot of sales leaders are considering. And I think really there's an opportunity to be, you know, more sophisticated. I guess, you know, there can be a knee-jerk reaction to let's pull back and focus on our existing customers. And of course, yeah, that could be a good strategy, but of course there are still customers out there that, you know, may want your products and services. Mm-hmm. So how do you understand actually where that propensity to buy is in the market, in your existing customer base, and also in the net new market? Because, you know, this recession is going to affect different sectors differently. And so, you know, maybe that some of your existing customers actually are the ones pulling back more so than perhaps some of their customers out in other segments. So I think mm-hmm. it's really that opportunity, instead of perhaps, you know, following historical trends, to think about how can we use, you know, data and information to help us target our sellers better, and you know, really ensure that we're capturing, you know, the market that is there.
Yeah. So if we dive into that a little bit, so what's that look like in terms of, you know, you talk about historical data, but what are the other data points? You know, there's certainly have a explosion of intent data that's now, you know, available for sellers and so on, but other data that sales leaders should be looking at to say, okay, here's how we're going to establish our priorities. These are the opportunity types that we think, you know, higher likelihood they're going to make a purchase decision in the next 12 months or whatever.
Yes, yeah. And I think there's two steps to that, I'd say. There's obviously the plan for the year ahead, but there's also the agility, you know, during the year ahead. So that I think, you know, historically, sales leaders, in a way, although we use technology a lot, in terms of the planning processes and how we make adjustments, we're perhaps not as modernized as we think. So I think there's a real opportunity to have more agility in the process ongoing. You know, we kind of historically set targets and quotas for the year, and, you know, adjustments may get made, but mostly we kind of look at this annual planning. And I'm sensing that, you know, that opportunity now to not only use those predictive insights in terms of, you know, what data can help me really inform where I'm going, you know, that propensity to buy, those indicators from the market, but also how do I use that throughout the year to continually adjust and refine what I do. So, you know, as you said, you can pull data sets in. It can be simple things like, you know, what are they searching for? Are they hiring talent in the areas where perhaps you're selling? And mm-hmm. All these different indicators that you can pull in to inform you at the start. But then, you know, as you go through the year, you know, those predictive insights can keep informing you, obviously, in what's changing in the market. But then also you've got your own data in terms of, you know, what's working. So, you know, what's moving through your pipeline fast? What's your average sales price in certain areas? What's your conversion rate? So, you know, also using that real-time data within your own business compared to that external data to see, you know, what's really happening in those territories and segments and, you know, adjustments required. So I think there's a lot of information that is available now that can help make really sophisticated decisions rather than kind of, you know, falling back on a sort of gut feel or historical trends alone.
Mm-hmm. So in this environment, in, you know, let's say at the individual contributor level, you know, want people keep them focused, motivated, productive, a lot of noise surrounding them, especially, you know, in a downturn. You know, you can look at, you know, the territory they're working on, their quota, the comp, how do you sort of prioritize working through those, and what would you do differently? I mean, you know, I've heard some sales leaders talk about, hey, we, you know, have to segment our territories different or so on. What's your sort of best advice for CROs based on your experience in this type of environment?
Yes, yeah. I mean, I think it's, as you said, it's getting all the data points that can help you understand where your best propensity to buy or the propensity for your sellers to sell is. And, you know, that can be down to channel. It can be down to, you know, the partners, the individual account executives you've got. So really understanding, you know, what they're good at, what their strengths are. So I think that's part of mm-hmm. it. You know, combining that with data in terms of, you know, where your market is, and really having a good view of matching the right reps to the right opportunities, and obviously, you know, aligning the quota to the size of those opportunities. So really thinking about what the addressable, market is today for those sellers, and, you know, doing that very intelligently. So building all that data in, and, you know, applying, you know, if you like, algorithms to calculate where you think the opportunity is for the sellers. But then, you know, really, supporting them through the year in terms of looking at, well, what's actually happening. And I think that's where, you know, what is the coverage of the territory? And if we think about it, I'm sure you've seen this, sometimes territories are richer than expected, and you can find that, you know, sellers are perhaps focusing only a narrow part of their territory. And so, you know, I mean, all the great technology that many sales organizations are using today to, you know, see what outreach is happening, what calls are being made, what coverage of the territory is, what engagement the marketing is causing in that territory. You know, you can use that data to see what's really happening in the territories and make adjustments as well, so that, you know, you can ensure that sellers have a fair opportunity to achieve their targets, and through the year make those adjustments to make sure that, you know, hopefully what we're looking for is a really strong balanced rep performance across your business. So, you know, you don't necessarily just have the superheroes and then a big gap to the rest of the performers, but you've got this really strong, you know, balanced rep performance across your business. And I think that's what, you know, is the ideal place that most sales and revenues leaders want to achieve at the moment, to get that really consistent performance across the business.
Well, yeah, you'd hope, right? Because certainly in earlier stage companies, there tends to be this reliance on superstar, one or two superstars to drive it. But yeah, that's never sustainable, especially as you scale. Quota setting becomes really tricky in this environment because you want to make people feel like they have attainable targets that build a sense of confidence they can reach them and so on. But, you know, we've had this trend in B2B sales, certainly exist over the last decade, is well under 50% of sellers are hitting their quota every year. Seems like that fundamentally, for me, I think contributes to sort of what I consider sort of broad, widespread performance issues in sales. Mm-hmm. Companies sort of have to have, I don't know, a little bit of courage to be more realistic in their quota setting, especially, in the teeth of a downturn.
Yes, and I think it has to align to, you know, where your strategy is. And we're seeing, you talked about what a revenue leader is doing, and we're seeing revenues also take a step back and think about what is it that they're actually trying to, achieve. So where before, I've seen, we were working with a company called Cox Automotive, who were driving their sellers on, volume. It was all about volume, and now they've moved it to more about, revenue, and that drives a different behavior. So it's also aligning to, the objectives of the company, which might have, subtly changed in this period where, the measures of success are different. And the same as we talked about, profitable growth, maybe that brings in different measures. So I think the first thing is to ensure that the sellers are aligned directly to what the business wants to achieve, and obviously are motivated and aligned to those objectives. So I think that's the first thing. And then, as you said, it's about really, if you can predict, where your market is, then obviously you can be more confident that your sellers can achieve those targets, and also being bold enough to make adjustments. And that's where this agility comes in, I think, where...
Right.
Rather than playing the year out and, putting your stakes on the table and hoping, it's to keep assessing continuously what's actually happening, particularly in a market like this where, we know it's going to be more volatile. We know that buyers are going to, scrutinize decisions a little bit more. They're going to, I think we're all seeing it already that, perhaps projects that were, on the cards for this year maybe have been delayed or, being reprioritized. And so it's also really important that we arm the sellers with really understanding how, they qualify well, and that they understand that, projects and investments are only going to be made if they can articulate the value to the customer. So it's really, a call for the sellers also to understand that they have to really understand how they're going to impact the customer's business positively if they're going to be successful. I think that's something that, particularly in a market like this, is really critical.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it raises a sort of broader issue, and one I talk about here on the show a lot, is that I think those who survive, if not somewhat thrive during a downturn, change some of their focus at the individual level and the management level on execution and the ability to execute opportunities and execute deals more effectively. Because you know, you've got the same number of players oftentimes chasing fewer dollars. How do you increase your win rates in a downturn?
Yes, absolutely. And I think some of that comes down to, you know, qualifying that you're in the right, you know, obviously in the right territories and the right market. So I think that's a good, you know, start. And you know, I think, as we said, a lot of that data, you know, looking at what's happening, you know, in real time, where are, you know, leads converting, where are they slowing down, where is the movement through the funnel, you know, not moving at the pace that you would expect. So there's, you know, lots of information that can help with understanding where sellers should be. But then once they're there, obviously what you're encouraging is, you know, clearly that there's good qualification, but that they're really understanding why the customer would buy, and that they're, you know, engaged with the client, really understanding that, you know, why that organization is going to invest, why they're going to change, why this is going to be a prioritized project. And so I think there's a lot, you know, that sellers can do to ensure that they're, you know, ultimately working on the right opportunities, engaged with the right level, you know, good old MedPIC, you know, making sure that they're, you know, they understand the metrics, they understand the pain, they've got champions, they get into the economic buyers. So, you know, I think all of these things become increasingly important, you know, in a market such as this. So putting them on the right territories is critical, you know, being willing and brave to adjust those, and then obviously ensuring that that great sales excellence is, you know, happening in out there in the field.
Yeah, which is a challenge, right? I you know, get back to this idea of execution, and I'm sort of curious in your business. I mean, what are sort of the, you know, key metrics that you focus on with sellers? I mean, I personally believe that not enough attention is given to, especially in the software world, is given to win rates, which to me are sort of the metric that sales teams should be focused on, because it is the ultimate vote of how effective your sellers are with the buyer. You know, is that one that you track, or are there others that you really track and that maybe come to the fore, like I said, when we're in more tight economic times?
Yes, absolutely. And I think this is something that, you know, we're hearing from a lot of sales leaders, and certainly we do as well. You know, when you look at, you know, rep performance, and when you look at, you know, the whole sort of sales performance management, what are those KPIs that you look at? And certainly, you know, conversion rates, and from different sales stages, of course, because you might want opportunities qualified out early, but obviously what happens with them, you know, as you move through the funnel. So, you know, I think looking at that movement through the funnel, when conversion happens, I think also pipeline creation, Andy, I mean, you know, the creation of pipeline on a continuous basis, what are the sellers creating, as well as what are they converting, and what is their overall coverage? I think, you know, pipeline and the quality of that pipeline is something that is increasingly being looked at, and the right type of pipeline. So I think that's there. And then, you know, even data, as I said, you know, this, we kind of look at, you know, propensity to sell or propensity to buy. So from a seller's perspective, if you've got multiple products, what are they selling well? Into which segments, you know, what's their velocity versus perhaps their peers? And this can be good coaching opportunities if you can use this data to say, hey, you know, how come, you know, you lose these types of opportunities, or you win them and your peers do differently? So I think, you know, there's a real opportunity to compare across sellers, which gives, you know, great coaching opportunities as well. And then again, you know, broader looking at your markets, you know, you've got channels or partners, where are your channels and your partners performing in different sorts of opportunities? And then, of course, ultimately, discount rates, you know, are you enforcing, you know, the rigor in terms of your contract prices? So there's, you know, all sorts of, I guess, lead indicators, I would say, that, you know, you can look at, and, you know, having this data to kind of slice and dice and draw comparisons and look for trends, I think, is something that really arms sales leaders, and indeed even devolves some of this down to the reps so that they can hold themselves accountable as well for and learn how they're comparing to their peers, particularly people that they hold in high regard. I always think it's great to expose that data so that reps can see who they aspire right. to be and how they're performing as well.
Well, so a question along the same lines is, how often are, in your case, in your company, is how often are you talking to the buyers and say, okay, not just simple win-loss analysis, but what was it about the interaction with our salespeople that made you want to buy from us? How much knowledge do you have about the buying experience itself, and how do you apply that, bring that forward to how you enable your sellers, what type of people you hire in sales, for instance, even?
Yes, I think that's a really good, and I think sometimes when we're when we're reviewing sales talent, sometimes it would be great if you could clone people, wouldn't it? And I have to my degree many years ago was in genetics, and I wish I could I wish I'd known how to clone great salespeople. But wouldn't that be wonderful? But you're right. I mean, I think certainly we do win and loss reviews, and we use third party companies to help us as well, so that we get that independent view of why we've won or why we've not won, and really ensure that we're getting that feedback and playing that back to our sellers, and obviously to how we execute to make sure that we're improving. So that's certainly something that we do in terms of I guess the end result. But I think it's also looking at, as you say, those trends we talked about in terms of if velocity is slowing down, or if we've got something that's in a peaking, perhaps close no decision, I'll call it, where you're in a process and then suddenly nothing happens. Really looking into what's happening there and what we can do about it. For instance, I was having a conversation earlier today about responding to RFPs. One of the favourite topics, you get those RFPs in. Are you aware of them? Have you influenced them? What's the opportunity to win them? Right. Win with those RFPs, and that's a typical thing to monitor, and then play back to the organisation about, well, if you are going to invest in RFPs, which can be extremely expensive, as we know, actually, what are the good conditions for success that you should have before you progress with RFPs? And I think that's a good example of how you can keep evaluating not just what happens at the end of the process, but all the stages of the process, and where you can get momentum, or obviously maybe on the wrong path earlier in the sales process.
Well, I mean, you talked about velocity earlier, and it's sort of related to velocity, but not specifically on it. But I find that most companies really don't understand and detail exactly how much time they've invested in order to win a deal, and to correlate the time to size of the deal or the type of product they're selling or the type of customer they're selling to. And so, in most sales organizations, you talk about, what's the length of your sales cycle, and X weeks or months or whatever. But to me, that's sort of almost irrelevant, because what really the only relevant measure, or the most relevant measure for me, is how many hours do I have to invest as an organization, whether it's an RFP or it's a big deal that we've worked on for a long time or small. I mean, how much of a salesperson's time and an SE's time and a sales frontline manager's time and a VP's time and so on. And I find organizations aren't tracking that. In my mind, they really don't understand their productivity that way, because they really don't understand, how much revenue am I generating per hour of time I'm spent selling? And I think when things get tough, this becomes a really important metric to look at, because to a point you're making earlier, if you're not doing effective qualification and discovery and you're getting a little sloppy, you're going to find that you're investing even more time in opportunities that end up with no decision, for instance, or even those you won that you spent way more time on it than you should have.
Yeah,
it's just like,
It's been something that sales organizations typically haven't really focused on, is it? That's kind of real cost of what we do, particularly in the B2B
right.
sales. Yeah.
Yeah, and it seems, at least for me, this is something I'm talking about more and more. I just think it's increasingly important is when you look at an organization like, I don't know, look at the major consulting firms, Deloitte or somebody like that. I bet you they have that information because, you know, their people are keeping track of how they invest, you know, spend their time, right? They're filling out time cards.
Yes.
And I think that's the future of sales, quite honestly, is being able to track to a specific opportunity what it really costs. Not most companies do this roll up CAC calculation, you know, quarterly or at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. And it's just an estimate. It's like we have the opportunity to really understand that and then understand, because that really tells you sort of the effectiveness, not only of the individual, but of, you know, messaging and, you know, various other parts of the opportunity that you're working on.
Yes. Yeah. And I think, as we said, with this sort of view of profitable growth now, I think, you know, the cost of sale mm-hmm. is becoming something that's, you know, top of mind for CROs. And I mean, to your point specifically about, I guess, you know, our core sellers and measuring that, you know, certainly our own organization and other organizations we work with are measuring, you know, the kind of hours investment, the pre-sales investment, the resource investments that we're seeing mm-hmm. increasingly those built into the models so that that can be captured and, you know, and that time investment as well as, you know, the resource along the way is included in there. But I think also, you know, from a sort of CRO and, you know, the business leader's perspective, I think people are taking a step back, particularly, you know, if we sort of turn back to COVID and what we've learned from, you know, COVID, looking at, you know, new ways to sell and different cost models to sell in terms of, you know, starting to think about that, you know, it's a virtual world, isn't it? As we know, you know, if you, in the past, maybe if you think about your territories, you might have organized them geographically because you wanted to be close to the, you know, the customers. But, you know, these days, you know, I'm finding certainly that, you know, customers, although the HQ might be in one place, you find that the executives can be, you know, positioned
anywhere,
all around
right.
the country. So, and right. if you wanted to visit, then you'd probably find that, you know, they'll be on a Zoom call with you anyway. And, you know, I mean, and I think this is fascinating because, I mean, I remember way back in my career, when I was in London, taking, I think, half a day out once to travel out to Heathrow, go and visit a customer. And I got into the meeting room and with one of the customers and the other six, I think, were on a video conference. And this is probably, mm-hmm. you know, 15 years ago. And then back then I thought, well, this is interesting because I've effectively spent half a day for this 1 hour. And, you know, how effective are these people? And this was 15 years ago. And, you know, it made me think back then that, you know, there's opportunities in the sales process, both with sellers and with pre-sales, to look into models where we use, you know, virtual, offshore, you know, opportunities in how we build our, you know, operating models. And, you know, even mm-hmm. back then, you know, at the time I was running a large pre-sales business across EMEA, and we started to put in virtual pre-sales to really help do more repeatable activity virtually mm-hmm. with clients. And so, you know, that's one way of, you know, addressing the cost base. And I'm kind of hearing, you know, a lot of that now post-COVID because we've got so used to this virtual world and that we're, you know, very comfortable with the idea that, you know, a lot of the sales process will be virtually and it's so much more efficient. And therefore, you know, your location of your sellers and the supporting, you know, cast, if you like, you know, brings the opportunity for new models. And, you know, and we're talking to plenty of organizations who, you know, particularly perhaps if they cover the SMB segments mm-hmm. where, you know, perhaps historically, you know, the cost of entry into SMB, you know, the richness, if you like, of that SMB territory and the, you know, many tens of thousands of, you know, potential customers there, you know, wasn't really open to them because of the cost of entry.
Right.
But now, you know, using different technologies, different location strategies, you know, they're able to address that, you know, SMB segment.
Well, a question for you, because, yeah, as you said, you've been in sales a while, not as long as I have been, but you've been in sales a while. And, you know, I found in the pandemic, and it's interesting, your experience, you know, with your organization is mm-hmm. found that people sort of overstated how much of sales sort of took place in person versus virtually. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I just look at my own experience through the years selling, you know, 7-8 figure deals around the world. Yeah, I did almost all my selling on the telephone, right? And this was decades ago. Yeah. I mean, I did my first video call with a customer in the 80s. The preponderance of sales has always been virtual. Mm. It's just the median has changed, right? Now we have more video. It's more routine, though, you know, was using Skype for 20 years before that, but it's like, has it really changed that much? Yeah. Because sort of my point is yes, it has, but it's always been, I was talking to one person who was saying, oh, well, yeah, we did 75% of our sales were in person. And then, you know, you drill down, you're talking to this client and it's like, oh, well, okay, maybe 5% was in person.
Yes. I understand totally. I think what we've certainly seen a shift in is almost an expectation that elements of the sales process were going to be on site. And, you know, now more acceptors that don't even take, you know, the demonstrations. And certainly in my career, I look back now, I think I probably was paid to be more a driver than I was a salesperson. And I'm sure I spent most of my day, you know, in my car.
Right.
Facing customers. But you know, now I think there's an acceptance and certainly a lot of demonstrations that I see, you know, both in our business and, our customers' business. There are a lot of remote now, and it's expected that, you know, that's the almost the norm, that you will schedule right. These things remotely. It means that wider audiences can be engaged and the discussion and the solutioning. So I think it's always been part of the cycle that, you know, you get on the phone and do elements of it. But now I think more so, you know, many stages of the sales process now are acceptable. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think there's definitely still a value in obviously meeting face to face. I think, particularly, you know, if you're doing big ticket sales, B2B sales, there's definitely a value in, you know, building that rapport. And I think, you know, face to face helps build the trust. There's a balance, isn't there? And I think, you know, certainly as we look at, you know, that cost effectiveness of sales and understanding the cost, then, you know, there are certainly, you know, increasing opportunities to optimize the way that we, you know, do the sales process repeatedly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, you know, there's sort of one of my rules of thumb is when it comes to our use of technology in sales, which we've got these fantastic technologies, is, but to a point you made before, is there's times you want to be in person. Is people need to understand, it's just because you can do something with technology doesn't mean you should. Right? I mean, yeah, we do. Yeah, I have plenty of clients around the world that I've, you know, never met, nor I probably ever in person. But on a certain size deal, as you talked about, a bigger ticket deal, I can guarantee you that if I were competing against somebody and, you know, for $1 million opportunity and they chose not to travel and I chose to travel to meet the client, I would win it. Yeah. And it's like, you know, yeah, we can do entire sales without ever visiting the client. But I think increasingly, you know, we're coming back to, and I'm seeing it already in some clients, is, yeah, the ability to go travel and meet somebody makes a difference.
Yeah, I think ultimately, you know, there's a trust relationship, particularly because the sale, of course, is not the end of it, as we know. It's really the start of the relationship. So, you know, what you're looking, obviously, you're going to, you know, help them effect change in their organization and achieve some real business value. And therefore, there's going to be a lot of it face-to-face engagement with the business ongoing, and then hopefully, you know, it goes well and you're expanding your business with them. So, you know, that's a, you know, trusted relationship that has to be built up. So I think, as you say, you know, sales is just the start. So to build that relation, to build that trust, and to be able to really challenge the customer, I think, you know, customers don't want sellers that just turn up and respond to what they're asking for. You know, I think they're looking for, you know, sellers that bring something, organizations that bring something, that, you know, share what they've seen in other organizations that challenge their thinking, you know, maybe stretch their thinking a little bit in terms of what they could achieve,
exactly.
You know, bring business value cases, you know, really help them prioritize where they should, you know, invest to, you know, ultimately achieve, you know, the business goals. So I think you know, that requires trust, and that's why I still think there's absolutely a place for, you know, face-to-face and, you know, meeting our customers directly.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, maybe in some companies travel was used, you know, too broadly, right? I spent a chunk of my career working for a number of different startups in the Valley and other places, and hey, we didn't have money. So we were constrained. When we decided to travel, it had to be worth it, right? And there was something significant that had to take place. Otherwise, yeah, you did it virtually.
Yeah, well, the cost of travel today is more handy. I mean, you know, the price of flying these days is you know, significantly increased, isn't it, at the moment? So I think,
well, actually, yeah. No. I was telling the story to somebody. I remember back, yeah, I worked for a CEO at the time. Most of my clients were in New York City. I was in the Bay Area. And, yeah, he wanted us traveling almost every week. And so most of my clients were back on the East Coast. And I remember paying, yeah, this was, you know, 30 plus years ago. I mean, paying $1,500 each way to get to the East Coast. It's like, that'd be in today's dollars, that's like $4,500 each way.
Yeah.
I mean, travel was really expensive.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we just made sure it was worth it. Mm. If we, you know, theory of constraints does wonders, I think.
Yeah. I think that's just, as we said there, it's a bit more. It's interesting these days because, you know, certainly as I take trips to, you know, New York or wherever, and I say, okay, let's meet some of the customers. And I find that, you know, even though their base is there, that, you know, that CIO might be based in, you know, Texas, and you know, the CFO is somewhere else. And so actually catching them at that location is, which brings back, you know, this blend, doesn't it, you know, between physically getting there and then, you know, also supporting the virtual communication.
Well, yeah, no, I find with, you know, meeting clients, same thing is they're all around. And when you go to meet, you know, we never, I haven't met in somebody's office forever. I mean, it's because everybody's working out of home or whatever. You know, we're meeting at you know, a restaurant somewhere, or you know, sometimes a co-working space.
I guess we saw COVID that we still managed, didn't we? You know, and I was locked in a bedroom in Singapore for 3 years, so and we still managed to, you know, grow the business. So it just goes to show, doesn't it, that it is possible.
Absolutely, very possible. All right. Well, Karen, well, thank you so much for joining me. If people want to connect with you and learn more about what you do, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, well, get me on LinkedIn. It's Karen Clark on LinkedIn with Anaplan. Happy to talk
Perfect.
To you.
Clark with an E at the end.
Clark with an E at the end, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you, Andy. It was a great conversation. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And look forward to doing it again.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you.
Okay, friends, that's it for this episode. First of all, I want to thank you for taking the time to listen. I'm so grateful for your support of the show. And I want to thank our guest, Karen Clark, for sharing her insights with us today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to this podcast, Sales Enablement with Andy Paul, on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. So thank you for your help with that. And thank you so much for investing your time with me today. Until next time, I'm your host, Andy Paul. Good selling, everyone.
Hey, sales strategists. At Revenue.io, we're not just imagining the future of sales, we're building it. We offer the world's most complete platform for revenue teams, and we're featured in the most recent Forrester Waves for both sales engagement and conversation intelligence. With Revenue.io, you can slash call prep time to seconds, guide your reps in real time to have more successful conversations, and after calls, we generate ready-to-send recap emails so sellers can keep deals soaring toward the finish line at light speed. See the future of sales now at revenue.io.